This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Konya.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Boy, are we going to take a deep dive today. And I know I've used that phrase before, but we are going into the ocean deep dive.
Oh, I'm so excited for this episode. Are we solving today?
How do you get to the bottom of the ocean?
How do you get to the bottom of the ocean? I have a feeling this has to do with one of our very favorite institutions, Jeff. Who is our guest today?
Our guest today is the fantastic Dr. Rosa Leon Zayas, who is an assistant professor at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, but who just returned from a wicked cool project with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution because she is a marine biologist.
Oh, welcome to the show, Dr. Rosa.
Hi, everybody.
We are thrilled to have you. So normally we start out asking how you got started, but now that we teased our listeners, tell us where you just came back from, because Jeff and I are just bursting with excitement.
Yeah, we have to talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I was just in one of the most incredible and amazing experiences of my life. I had the opportunity to join a scientific expedition in which we used the manned submersible Alvin. Alvin is a manned submersible that has been in operation for many years.
Yes.
But in the last 2 years, it's gone an overhaul and it got rebuilt to be able to achieve the deepest depths that it's ever been able to go to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Up to 2 years ago, the deepest that the Alvin could go would be 4,500 meters.
Which is pretty far. I mean, seriously.
Right.
Very far. Very far. It's about the average depth of the ocean, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But now, the Alvin can go to 6,500 meters.
Oh,
Gosh. That is a big jump.
Yeah.
It is very big. And technically, that puts it to be able to explore the very surface of what we consider the deepest parts of the ocean, which we call the hadal zone. That zone in the ocean, the hadal zone, is the zone that I've basically spent all of my life, my scientific life, studying.
And now you got to see it. Yay!
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So just real quick for all of our listeners, in case you don't want to do the math in your head, 6,500 meters is roughly 20,000 feet below the surface of the ocean.
Wow.
Let's all just take a wow moment for a second, because that is truly incredible. And it's the deepest that the Alvin submersible has ever gone in our ocean. Wow, Dr. Rosa, that is so cool. Can you talk a little bit more about the hadal zone?
Yeah,
I don't think a lot of listeners know about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The hadal zone is what we call the zone in the ocean that lies below 6,000 meters in the ocean.
Wow.
And it goes anywhere from 6,000 meters to 11,000 meters in the deepest part of our planet's ocean.
Wow.
11,000 meters, it's really truly an incredible depth, right? Many, many miles, many, many feet underneath the surface of the ocean. And those areas are mostly really found on what we call deep trenches.
Okay.
So deep trenches basically hold those really incredible depths. The deepest trench in the world, which is the one that goes down to 11 kilometers, it's the Marianas Trench. French.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The deepest trench in the Pacific Ocean. And the deepest trench in the Atlantic Ocean is the Puerto Rico Trench, which is where the Alden expedition that I was in was at, and the Puerto Rico Trench.
I didn't know they had one. So how deep is the Puerto Rican Trench?
The Puerto Rico Trench is about 8,300 meters. So 8,000 meters and 300.
Wow. I see. Now, I've mostly heard about the Marianas Trench. Of course, that's the one that everybody hears about. I did not know that there was an extremely deep one over here. Can you tell us a little bit about how we think those trenches form?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually a very interesting geological phenomenon, right? That happens really around the world where two tectonic plates collide into each other. One of them is denser than the other. Then the denser tectonic plate sinks underneath the the less dense one. And it creates kind of like a funnel, like a divot, right?
Yes.
The earth crust. And then that's how the trenches are formed.
That's also cool.
It really is. And just like Jen was saying, a lot of people have heard about the Marianas Trench.
Yeah.
You know, I think humans are fascinated with those extremes. The deepest place, the highest place, the coldest, the hottest. But there are other fascinating places that aren't necessarily all the way to the extremes that are just as cool to learn about. So I have a question. How deep on this expedition did you go in the Alvin?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity, which was incredible, to be in the team of the first scientists that were able to dive with the Alvin at this incredible depth.
And wow, that's
our
awesome.
First dive, yeah, it was really incredible. Our first dive was to 6,047 meters.
Wow. That's
how long does it take to get down there?
I was going to say congratulations on that too, by the way.
Thank you. It's very great to be able. I mean, you know what? It was just in the backyard of my place of birth, right? In Puerto Rico. So that was
right.
Special.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Which even makes it better. But
yeah, it was definitely very special. And yeah, it was truly an incredible opportunity. It was so exciting.
Okay. So Jeff's question was, and mine too, how long does it take to get down that far?
Yeah, it takes quite a while. For us, it took about 2.5 hours to get down.
Oh,
wow.
Okay. So it's a really interesting experience because you just kind of sit in this very small space. So this submersible fits inside of a titanium sphere, which has very small windows that you can look out of. It fits three people total, two science observers and a pilot.
The
submersible.
I assume you're nice and close and comfortable in there.
It is very cozy. Very cozy. Yes. And very, very close by the end of the trip. So with your team of scientists, you basically sit in this sphere and you sink right through the water.
Right.
Wow.
For 2.5 hours until you get to the bottom.
Wow. Okay. So again, I have to echo Jen's congratulations on being selected to be a scientist to go down there. What an incredible, like, Jen and I aren't marine microbiologists and we're that excited for you. So what were you studying down there or what were you looking for?
Yeah, that is a great question. So one of the things that I've always been very interested in is to try to understand how microorganisms, in my case, right? I'm really interested in all those things that nobody can see, but do a lot of amazing things. How are these organisms able to do all the things that they do under such extreme environments?
Yeah.
Right? And that is really important for a number of reasons, right? Microorganisms are kind of the base of the food chain. And also, they're very helpful at recycling all of the chemicals and materials that are in the ocean and that eventually other organisms need. Additionally, it's really interesting to study these very extreme environments because we can use them as analogous systems for the outer planets, right?
Yes. Yes. That's the cool thing.
Yeah, we can
try. Space and ocean are so tied together in a lot of ways.
They're very related. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we can, if we can understand how organisms do the things that they do under such extreme environments, right? There's no light. The temperature is very, very low. The hydrostatic pressure is crushing. So this is a really, and the amount of nutrients that they have, by the time food kind of rains down through the water column all the way to 8,000 or 11,000 kilometers.
Right.
The food is kind of very poor because all the yum yums were already because they were down, right? So by the time they get to the very deepest parts of the ocean, the microbes are like, well, I guess we have this kind of sad food to eat. And they have to adapt to that, right? So part of the questions that I'm interested in thinking about is how organisms do that, how microorganisms adapt to this very extreme conditions.
So are you able to gather samples? Are you just observing and taking video? Like, what do you get to do for your, you know, are you conducting experiments down there? What are you gathering your data?
All of those things are true. Yes, is the answer to that.
Okay.
So we collect video and record observations. We are able to collect samples. For my personal research, we collected sediment samples, sediment push cores. With a cylinder of sediment from the deepest parts of the ocean.
Right.
We can collect animals. We collect rocks. And we also can collect water from that depth.
Okay.
All things in which microbes are, right? Microbes are in the sediments, in the water column. They're associated with other organisms. They live on and inside of rocks. So we get to study all of those different ecosystems, basically, that organisms are, microorganisms are part of.
Okay, real fast. How do you bring them up? Because you can't bring them inside. There you go. I've always wondered that because we've had scientists on there before and they're like, we're collecting samples. I was like, I know you open and expose yourself to that crushing pressure, man. That's it. You're gone.
It would not be good. No, it's not advisable. Nobody wants that. Once you're in that tiny little sphere, nobody is opening that.
Yes.
Until you get back to the surface. You're like in and there. But the submersible has two robotic arms and the front of the submersible. Work with hydraulics and are controlled by the pilot that is inside of the vehicle.
Okay.
And in between those two robotic arms, there's a platform. And on that platform, that looks like a gigantic milk crate, basically.
Okay.
In that platform, you can put different holding containers.
Gotcha.
So scientists bring with them to the expedition different types of holding containers to strap to this oversized milk crate.
Okay.
And once you have all those things in there, you can then use the robotic arms to pick things and put them into boxes. Or grab things like the water bottle or a push core instrument to be able to get a milk crate, basically.
Well, that makes sense. So then when you go up, it just all rides out front. And then when you get there, then you can take it out on regular.
Yeah. Okay. So it's one of the most exciting moments, really. Every day after the Alvin comes up, everybody cheers on all of the drivers, right? It's very exciting. All of the scientists and the pilots and congratulations and high fives. And everybody's like, what is in the basket?
Ooh, what are our gifts? What did we find?
Okay. So with that thought of what is in your basket, now that the Alvin has gone deeper than it's ever gone before, so you have samples from deeper than before, and you are at the top of the marine biology game, what are you hoping to find or learn about this stuff that you just brought back?
Yeah, you know, I am really interested to see a number of different things. One of the questions that I ask often is, how are these microorganisms able to deal with the high hydrostatic pressure?
Right.
Right.
So
they're so small.
They're tiny and the pressure is so high.
It's right? so high.
So some of the things that I'm going to be doing with the samples is taking the material and then crushing it all to tiny little bits and extracting the DNA and RNA that is inside the microbe.
Oh,
okay.
And once I have this material, right, the DNA in the RNA, which basically tells me what's within the genomes of these microbes.
Yes.
And we can ask questions about what are the genes that are present and what does that tell us about the kind of physiology and metabolism that these microbes can do, right? What kind of work they're doing down there.
Yeah, exactly.
Material, or are they using this chemical, or how are they doing what they're doing?
Oh, yeah. That's cool. So I know that there are hydrothermal vents by the Marianas Trench. Are there also hydrothermal vents down by the Puerto Rican Trench?
So hydrothermal vents often happen in places in which the tectonic plates are separating.
Okay.
And it is possible that there are some sites around the trench that may be happening, but not in the trench itself. Although looking potentially for other kinds of chemosynthetic environments, which is kind of generally what we call the hydrothermal vents,
right,
are methane seeps. So methane seeps are places within the ocean in which methane is bubbling from the bottom through the sediment and creates a very rich environment, different from the hydrothermal vents, but similar in the sense that it really fosters a really high density of organisms that feed off of this really yummy nutrient, which is
I mean, it's the only food source, right? Let's eat the methane. That's all we have.
And it's amazing, right? Because the microbes eat the methane. And then other things eat the microbes. So then you end up with this amazing set of crazy looking life, crazy clams and crazy little yeti crabs and all kinds of really crazy looking things that are there just because there's methane and the microbes eat the methane.
Oh, so they come to eat the microbes is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. So maybe hanging out by the methane is not the best place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some of those bigger organisms like clams and worms, tube worms, a lot of different things have evolved to grow microbes within them that serve like little factories, right? They microbes in the methane within their guts, like we have a gut microbiome, right?
So yes,
also have gut microbiomes, and they have these microbes that eat methane for them and then secrete other nutrients that the little clams or the tube worms need. So it's a really interesting system.
Nature's pretty cool.
Very much. You know, the Lion King song, Circle of Life, is playing in my head right
there
now.
There you go.
But the funny thing is, I have never in my life thought of that song or thought of the Circle of Life down to, no pun intended, down to the size and the depths that you're talking about, that this stuff is, as you said earlier, like humans can't see it. It is microscopic. But that's where that circle of life actually starts, because the bigger life in the ocean feeds on the smaller life. Well, that smaller life continues to feed and continues, and it goes all the way down to your world of that micro marine biology. Okay. So that leads me, I'm going to take us back just a second. Did you always want to study things that you couldn't see? That sounds weird to me.
Yeah, that is a really great question. No, the answer is I grew up in a very small town in the center of a very small island, right, in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And we didn't really have a lot of resources. We didn't even have cable. Cable didn't make it to our house. It was too remote.
I didn't have cable too, but that was my parents' choice. So not mine, by the way.
It didn't really make it. But I get it. I get it. So we only got a few channels, right, that were like the local,
right.
And once in a while, I had the chance to sit and look at surgeries that people perform, right, in this education channel. So it was very interesting. So when I was growing up, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be a surgeon. So when I started college, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be a surgeon. And I kind of quickly learned after doing some shadowing at the hospital that the hospital environment was not for me. It was for me. It was too sterile and smelled kind of funny to me. And the lights were so bright all the time. And
yes, I agree with that. Yeah.
It didn't make me feel good, you know? And definitely many, many props to doctors and medical professionals.
Oh, yes.
Agreed.
And the work they do is incredible, but it didn't feel like the environment for me. And at the same time, I had a friend that was doing research in a research laboratory in the university that I was studying, and his job was to study the water quality of rivers in Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay.
And he was looking to see if there were some kinds of microbes in there that could indicate that the water was polluted.
Right.
And his job was so cool to me. He would like leave the lab and go outside to the river.
Outside.
Outside. In the sun, by the river, collect water. He would bring it back and put it in this growing petri dishes that grow microorganisms. And all those petri dishes were all cool colors, like red and orange. And I was like, very cool.
Yes.
So that's how I started thinking that maybe I could do environmental microbiology. From there, I learned that there were things that lived really deep within the ocean. And that was such a mystery to me, right? Like,
how
does it work? And I am definitely very much into mystery. So it seemed like a really great possibility to study all those things that people know so little about and that we don't understand how they work. So I basically embarked in a quest, right, to learn more about the mysteries of all those things that we cannot see in the deepest parts of the ocean.
Very cool. That quest has taken you a really cool place now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the fun part about science, right? Doing, action, being out. I was lucky enough that I grew up with a creek basically in my backyard. And so I did, as a child, what, not completely with the auger plates, but I did capture water and look at it under a microscope and counted paramecium and, you know, what a 10-year-old kid could do. But I spent hours and hours down there at the creek. And so I'm with you. It's fun to get your feet wet, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had the great privilege to go many exciting places to study these parts of the ocean, right? I've collected samples in the Puerto Rico Trench multiple times. I've collected samples in the Tonga Trench. I've collected samples in the Mariana Trench. I've collected samples in the Peru and Chile Trench, right? So I've had really great opportunities to go and do science on really large ships that look like it should be a cruise ship, but it's really more like it's not like that at all. It's really more like, you know, a Navy type of ship in which you have like, you know, the really sterile gray looking
slides.
Right. Yeah, functional.
I was in the Navy. I'm very familiar with those types of ships, destroyers and so forth. I did want to ask, so you mentioned space, and I'm going to get this in before Space Geek Jeff does. So what are you studying in the ocean that could relate to space?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the same vein of understanding what genes these organisms have, microorganisms, that can give us a sense of what processes microorganisms have been doing or could be doing in a completely different but also extreme environment, right?
On another planet? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, in another planet that potentially has water, right? So we can say, well, in this really extreme environment, organisms are really relying on these processes, whatever processes that might be.
Wow,
right.
And this type of nutrients in these ways to be able to acquire energy or to be able to create carbon. If we go to another planet that also potentially has water or similar system, we should expect to see similar signatures. So when we get samples from those places in the future, we can look for those signatures in those samples, right? Do we see remnants of DNA that have this particular characteristics or this particular gene?
That's so cool.
It very much is. And it makes me think, Galactic Space Geek, thanks, Jen. It makes me think a lot about NASA's upcoming mission to Europa, Jupiter's icy moon that has a liquid ocean. And, you know, a lot of people are just, oh, we're not going to find alien fishies. And they think about, you know, goldfish or sharks. We're not going to find alien fishies on Jupiter's moon.
Probably not.
However, talking to Dr. Rosa, we could absolutely find microbial life that is ready to evolve into a next stage because we know we can search for methane because we now know that here on Earth, methane is a food source for super tiny creatures.
Absolutely. And, you know, and there is particular genes within the microbes that use the methane, right? So we can go over there and be like, is that gene present? Are these organisms using methane in a similar way?
Exactly.
It really is solving a puzzle of this one. We don't even know what the puzzle looks like, but if you have some pieces, you can start to find the next piece and then you know what to look for as the next piece and you just keep working.
Absolutely right.
So one thing I wanted to, just a neat thing, I just realized as you were saying, all of the places that you've had a chance to go collect samples and do this fun work that you've done, I realized that you have a much different map at your house than all the rest of us do. All the rest of us have a map of the world and we take our little colored pushpins and we put them on the states and the countries where there's land. And you have all of your pushpins all over the water on yours.
In the ocean. Correct.
Yeah.
So is there a place in the ocean on the earth that you have yet to go that is on maybe a bucket list or an ocean list for you of,
oh my gosh, so many possibilities. So cool.
70% covered in water, Jeff.
I know. It's so helpful. There's so much to study. It definitely will never be a lack of job prospects for me.
Yes. Always.
Okay, so where's the spot that's top of the list?
There is a trench at the very end of the South American continent, close to
Antarctica. Oh, okay.
I find that because of the currents and the placement of that particular trench, it would be so fascinating to study. It's very hard.
This is
rough there. So it's definitely a very, very challenging trench, but that would be one of the trenches that I would love to be able to study.
That sounds cool. So I have a question. So you're a scientist. So do you work for the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution or did you like apply to go down in Alvin? Like, how does that part of it work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So that happened. I do not work for Woods Hole. I work as a professor I'm at university.
Right.
In general, how it works is that when scientists are very interested in a particular question or a particular site or area of study, they can write proposals to different funding agencies, federal or private funding agencies, to basically make their case to say, this would be such an exciting thing to study. And in order to study that, we need this instrument, for example, the Alvin. And you put that in.
That's pretty cool. I mean, those of us might just need, like, you know, a microscope. You need the Alvin to get to where you're going. I think that's pretty cool.
I know. So that requires, you know, having the funds to be able to fund the expedition, the ship maintenance and workings, the Alvin maintenance, the Alvin crew, all those things are included in those types of proposals. And if you are fortunate enough to get your proposal funded, then you get to coordinate with Woods Hole to be able to utilize their equipment.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So we've had Dr. Anna Michelle on the show before. And was she on your expedition?
Dr. Anna Michelle was coming onto the ship as I was getting. We got to interact for a little bit. So she is still on the ship. They're still using the Alvin right now on very deep dives, but not on the Puerto Rico Trench. Now they are on a different site called the Mid-Cayman Rise.
Wow.
So Dr. Anna Michelle there with another set of really, really exciting and very brilliant scientists doing really great over there.
Yeah.
We're at a hydrothermal vent site. So.
Well, anytime that they need passengers, right? Like I would volunteer for that. I would just stand off to the side, out of the way, and just watch everything. It would be like an honorary aquanaut or something, right?
Jen's an excellent note taker.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very exciting and very important to people on these trips that are able to do things like, for example, communicate the science that we're doing to the external world.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
So, In our expedition, we had two non-scientists, we can call them, but Yes. They're very curious, incredible people. We had an artist in residence who was doing incredible work, capturing the excitement and the novelty and all the historic things that happened. And we had a journalist, right, to do a similar thing. And while they're not scientists, quote unquote, they are vital for this, right? So there is very important for us to have people as we do these expeditions that can communicate science, that can create curriculum and teach about the things that we're working on. So it's really great to actually bring those people with so they can experience the type of science that we do.
That's fantastic. And one of them, I believe, was Karen Romano Young, correct? We've also had her on our podcast. And she is fabulous. And she is the one that does the amazing artist work.
She was the artist in our trip. She is incredibly talented.
Yes.
Agreed. So, Dr. Osa, I want to ask you a slightly different question for our younger listeners, kids that love the water and love the ocean and love fishies. Not all of us. I'm based in Colorado. I don't get an ocean. I grew up in Boston, so I miss it almost every day. Not all of us get to live next to the ocean so we can drive there, and not all of us have a creek in the backyard, Jen. What would you say to younger listeners that love the idea of fishies, the oceans? We just don't happen to live there. What's a good way for us to learn more about it and try to experience it the best we can?
That is such a good question. And I think there's a lot of different ways that people can do that. Nowadays, there's definitely a lot of virtual experiences that people
can
into. Right.
From documentaries and different shows that people are able to go and see and explore, and small humans can get excited about all of those really amazing sites and learn about how people do science in the ocean, what kind of things are out there, how to explore the ocean. But not only those kind of very documentary type of things, but there's also many research institutions and universities that have really great interactive resources that
learn
about the ocean and what's there and how people study it. And, you know, many of us, I am very fortunate to live in a place that is close to the ocean, but I don't do research off the coast, right?
Yes.
Right.
So wherever I go, I get to sit on a plane and travel places.
Yes.
And I have many friends that are oceanographers and study the ocean in Arizona or in Colorado, or right? So you don't have to live in the ocean to study the ocean. You just
very cool. Okay.
About it.
Yeah. Well, and I will add, recently I was at the Georgia Aquarium. For those of you that have listened to our How to Train a Shark episode with Gretchen Burson, I went to the Georgia Aquarium where Gretchen was, and I got to do the shark and ray encounter, which was amazing. So anybody that's near there. So, you know, I invite all of our families that if you're traveling, look around. Like if you're in Atlanta, go to the Georgia Aquarium. There's lots of aquariums around. And you can experience, and a lot of them have like tactile things that you can touch, the sea stars or something like that. And it gets kids of all ages, thank you very much, very intrigued and interested. And I'm like, oh, if I could go back in time, I'd change my career. Like, I would be a marine biologist because it's just so amazing. But okay, we could talk to you about the Alvin forever, but we are at that point in our show where we ask our guests to give our listeners a challenge. I'm very curious. What is your challenge, Dr. Rosa?
All right. So I would like people to think about the extreme environment in the deepest parts of the ocean.
Okay.
So here is my question. I wonder if people can figure out how much pressure would you feel in your thumb if you were in the deepest parts of the ocean.
Ooh.
And I challenge people to think about it as like an example that anybody can picture, right? So it maybe would feel as if your parents were standing on your thumb, or, you know, maybe would it feel like
an elephant
was standing on your thumb, right? Like how would it feel like?
But oh my gosh, I love that.
This is really a mathematical equation, right?
Right.
Yes.
So here are some clues. It would be important to figure out the size of your thumb.
Okay.
Well, it's going to be important to figure out what are the units of hydrostatic pressure. Like, what are the mathematical units of hydrostatic pressure?
Right.
Okay.
We can then think about what would fit, what would it feel like if you were at the deepest parts of the ocean?
Jen, can you tell that she is an assistant professor in that she gave us a super fun challenge, but sort of snuck in some math and some research that we all have to do?
STEM. That's awesome. That's right. I love this challenge. Now I'm intrigued because I have a book called Astronaut Aquanaut, and I go and speak to the kids about this. Now I have to do the math so that I can say... It's like you have an elephant sitting on your thumb or whatever, right?
Yeah. And once you figure this out for your thumb, you can start thinking about what would it feel like on your chest? Like what? How much things you would need to be piled on you to feel that much pressure on your chest, for example, which is bigger, right, than your thumb.
Wow. I like it. Well done, Dr.
Yeah, that was great. Well, this has been so fabulous. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Dr. Rosa.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. It was my absolute pleasure.
Why, oh, why do these episodes have to end sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely could have kept talking to Dr. Rosa about that project and about her experiences on the Alvin. Wow, how exciting.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I would love to do that, assuming my little claustrophobic self could go in that. But how amazing can you, I mean, wow, just what you would see on the way down when you get to the bottom. Oh, I love the ocean. It's a dream. And she had such an amazing, tons of information to tell us. And I mean, her challenge is just too cool. Right, Jeff?
Yes. Now, I know that a lot of us like to think about, we learn a lot about pressure in all different ways as students, teachers, and scientists out in the world. But to imagine what it would be like for the pressure of your thumb to go down to where the Alvin is, talk about expanding your imagination for us to understand what that's like. And I'm already picturing me and my daughter putting different things on our thumbs, without crushing them, of course, at home to just kind of get a feel for what it's like to dive that deep into the ocean.
I mean, the weight of the pressure is just incredible. And I think it's amazing that engineers can design something to withstand that crushing pressure. So if any of our listeners, if you guys do this as a challenge or you learn something cool while you're doing this challenge, please reach out and tag us on our social media. We are at KibSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget to check out our website, which is solveitforkids.com. We'll have some really cool pictures, hopefully with Dr. Rosa on there, but definitely some cool pictures and video of the Alvin so you can see what it's like to go down to the bottom of the ocean.
And all of you listeners, let's remember what Dr. Rosa was talking about. The Alvin can now dive deeper than it ever has before, which means that humans are going to be learning about new places that we've never learned before. We can all continue learning, regardless of what the topic is, but who doesn't love continuing to learn about the ocean?
I do.
Until next time, Jen and Jeff will still be on dry land on Solve It for Kids.